You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. INET is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. How often are consumers being treated with contempt by many of the major tech good manufacturers? Have you ever noticed that the price of a particular piece of gear seems relative and reasonably priced? Then, after you part with your hard-earned cash, you find yourself the victim of an extortion racket when it comes to buying accessories for your new gadget. If you've bought a mobile phone in recent times, you would have certainly come across the aftermarket accessories such as car kits and Bluetooth headsets. These are traditionally copies of original or authentic accessories, sometimes of better qualities, but at half the price. Last week, the fourth generation iPhone was launched by Apple to a less than euphoric welcome, probably because Apple had lost a few prototypes and we'd all seen it before. But on reading the fine print, Apple have chosen to use a micro SIM which is not compatible with its recently released iPad. According to Nick Wilkins, press relations manager at O2, a UK-based carrier, an iPhone 4 micro SIM inserted into an iPad will detect that it is not a smartphone and will not work. He said, the micro SIMs for the iPhone are set up to allow voice calls, SMS messages and data functionality, where the iPad micro SIM is provisioned to allow pay-as-you-go data transfers only. The decision will prevent Apple users from carrying over data allowances from their iPhone to the iPad. O2 said that in time, it will make available a SIM which can be converted back and forth between the micro and regular sizes. But what about Australian carriers? Another downside is that it will slow down the end user's ability to swap SIMs out and change carrier based on their location or poor service unless they have a collection of micro SIMs. But not allowing the iPad and iPhone to swap SIMs looks only to be a sweetener for the telcos that support these devices, ensuring that Apple devotees have to buy two services. It also means that those with an older iPhone and a 4G iPhone can't swap between the two devices with the same number. So before you race off to the local Apple store, just remember you need a new micro SIM from the carrier of your choice before you start making calls on your new toy.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Twitter's fail whale has had the busiest month in 2 years. Telstra launches T-Box and fixed line phone pricing to remain unchanged. Facebook issues detailed response to privacy concerns, Apple delivers a Mobile Me update, and we take a look at the online banking world. Who's good and who's not so good? First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra's T-Box arrives. Microsoft Office 2010 is now available in Australia. New research proves that technology is changing dating rules forever. Microsoft starts a stolen accounts database. The Foxconn suicide probe is to be made public. And Facebook issues a detailed response to privacy concerns. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra has just entered into the IPTV world with the launch last week of T-Box, which is yet another internet-based media centre for the living room. The Linux-based T-Box, which was announced by Telstra in November last year and revealed last month, provides the ability for users to watch Big Pond TV, download movies, record and watch high-definition free-to-air channels, and view YouTube videos on their television. The real benefit of the T-Box is that data usage is unmetered for Big Pond customers. No matter how many movies are downloaded onto the device, it won't count towards monthly usage allowance. Telstra has also revealed that they've signed with MGM Studios to provide movies for the Big Pond Movies service. MGM will join other big names including Disney, Warner Brothers, Sony, Paramount and Village Roadshow, with titles likely beginning to appear on the service in the coming months. Telstra has released released a set of three new residential broadband bundles on sale to coincide with the release of the T-Box PVR. The T-Box faces real competition as other ISPs begin to compete in the internet-based television arena. Just last week, iiNet unveiled Fetch TV, which provides similar features but for a much higher price. Microsoft Australia last week announced the retail availability of the new Microsoft Office 2010. With its familiar Word, Excel, and PowerPoint applications, Microsoft Office is the world's leading productivity software. The launch of Office 2010 also marks the rollout of Office web apps to over 500 million Windows Live users. Web apps are tailored web versions of Word, Excel, OneNote, and PowerPoint available via Windows Live and gives users anywhere access to view, edit, and share Office 2010 documents and presentations. Microsoft's Marketing Director, Office at Retail, Mr. Dan Johnson.
Our studies show that more than 50% of people miss important messages in their inboxes because of email clutter. Office 2010 has great new features to give you control over your email, like new ignore conversation and clean up inbox command. So you can get rid of unwanted or duplicated emails and manage your email instead of your email managing you.
With Office 2010, Microsoft has also incorporated popular social networks such as Facebook, MySpace, and LinkedIn into Outlook email. Within the next year, it is estimated that more than 100 million PCs will ship preloaded with Microsoft's Office 2010. New Telstra research into Australia's love affair with technology and love reveals modern technology is creating a new set of digital dating rules. One in two Australians are considering it now acceptable to ask someone on a first date via a text message. Telstra's State of the Nation report has also revealed one in five people have accidentally sent a flirty text to the wrong person. Men, 20%, are more likely than women, 13.5%, to flirt text with a prospective partner. 40% of Aussie women admit to checking their partner's mobile inbox for flirty messages, and more than half, 58.6% of Australians, say it is not acceptable to break up with someone via text message, email, or even a phone call. Telstra Consumer Executive Director, Ms. Jenny Young.
The latest Telstra research reveals modern technology has created new digital dating rules. One in two Australians now believe it's acceptable to ask for a first date by text message. Two in five Australians delay texting back to play hard to get, and almost one in five get others to help draft flirty messages to prospective partners.
Microsoft has launched a new program designed to report and track stolen account data. The company said that its Internet Fraud Alert program would allow researchers to report stolen account details to a central database, which can then be shared with law enforcement groups and online retailers. A Microsoft spokesman said the aim of the program is to help slow the online trade of stolen account details. Such data is often harvested through phishing or malware operations and then sold wholesale for fraud and identity theft operations. Microsoft is donating the system to the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance. The non-profit group plans to combine the tool with a screening service from Acuity to create a system for law enforcement and retailers to securely access the database and track stolen accounts. According to government officials, China will publish results of an official probe into recent suicides at electronics maker Foxconn's giant manufacturing plant in South China. A string of 10 suicides this year at the Foxconn complex has brought intense scrutiny of Taiwan's Honghai Precision Industry, the owner of Foxconn, which makes the iPhone and other products for Apple, and also counts Dell and Hewlett-Packard among its clients. Vice Minister Zhang said the results of a government investigation into the suicides will eventually be released to the public. He indicated that the government was not treating the suicides as simply the reflection of stressful work conditions at the Foxconn plant near Shenzhen, the southern manufacturing hub, where Foxconn has about 400,000 employees. Families of workers who killed themselves and other critics have said long hours and harsh management methods were behind the suicides. Foxconn is embarking on a big recruitment drive for new workers for its manufacturing plants in other parts of China, including Chongqing in the southwest and Tianjin, a port city in the north, according to Hong Kong news reports on Sunday last week. And Facebook has issued a detailed response to an open letter from several privacy groups, which had asked the social networking site to address a number of policy issues. The letter from the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the Electronic Privacy Information Centre, among others, touched on six main issues to which Facebook has responded individually. Regarding third-party applications being able to access users' information, Facebook said that it will roll out a new data permission model for developers this summer to address this, and that it had added new functionality to allow users to opt out of this information sharing. The company also said that the recently launched instant personalization program had been widely misunderstood, and that it allowed only Facebook partners to access information that was already public on users' profiles, as anyone could anyway. Facebook also defended the use of its like button for storing information on users, claiming that data is kept for only 90 days, is not sold on for advertisement targeting, and works in the same basic way as all widgets across the internet. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Steve Jobs took the stage in San Francisco.
Yeah,
WWDF.
Yeah, much to everybody's surprise, he announced a new iPhone.
And Mr. Conroy can't use his iPhone because his three-year-old daughter's buggered it up.
Australians go to peer-to-peer in their droves.
And I'm standing in the foyer with Andrew watching the 7:30 report.
I thought I was getting held up by the bowls of petunias.
About time the government got some bang for their buck up there.
But the government used to understand the concept of due process.
Why is the New York Times afraid of RSS?
I think nowadays...
I don't think it's a problem at all.
It's becoming a lot more well-supported.
Let's take a step back from that. when was the last time I was on a tram?
Now, before we go off the subject of unlimited plan...
Yeah.
I'm very, very disappointed in you, Doctor.
Are you?
I would have expected better.
We respect your outrage. We just don't believe it's sustainable.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, it seems the war is over. The truce is here. The NBN looks like it's finally going to be laid to rest. Telstra gets a bit, the government gets a bit, we all end up paying for it, and we'll get fibre to our houses and no copper. That's got to be good. JD, good evening, welcome back.
Good evening, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're happy with this result? Is this good? We're going to talk about this tonight.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
They had to do something eventually, didn't they?
Well, it was either command or conquer, wasn't it, as they say in the classics. Graham, yeah,
Andrew,
your thoughts on this?
Well, I don't think that it's all put away and done and dusted, to be honest. I think Telstra said a few things that leave doors open. And, I think if they don't get what they want, this will be Telstra's threat for a little while now. Will be, if they don't get what they want, they're just going to say, oh, well, you can't have our trenches for your NBN.
Mm.
So do you think this is just a sweetener to keep them happy?
Yeah. Hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. There's an election coming, boys, didn't you know? Come on, put your cynical hats on. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. You've heard everyone here this evening. JD's in and Graham's in. Dr. Ron has otherwise been preoccupied. I don't know what his excuse was this week. We should get his wife in. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Dr. Ron Laney.
He's still got a camera on, though.
Yeah, he has, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, if you're watching us on...
Invisible
Ustream.tv.
Yeah.
/ Tech Talk Radio AU.
Absolutely. All right. Excuse my croaky voice this week. We're also going to hear from Adam Turner this week. We've really started a streaming fiasco here. He's got his 2 cents worth to put in, but I think he was, when you hear the couch, I think he was had a hot toddy and he's, you know, honey.
View from
and,
the pub again?
No. View from the sick bed.
Oh,
he had the you know, the lemon drink and the honey in the hot water and all that. He was more croaky than I am. So,
yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of that going around. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can come and talk to us. We even have a little caption on one of our politicians, or two actually. If you'd like to come along and put a caption there for us, we've started with one. One of the guys in the office came up with one. Thank you, Brian. If you're listening to us on the radio and you're near a computer or wherever you might happen to be, head along to the Tech Talk Radio website and you'll see on the left-hand side a picture of Mr. Rudd. Mr. Conroy there. It needs a caption. Click on it. Help us out. We're looking for the humorous ones, and we'll publish them all on the page that you'll go to. So we'll do that a bit more later on during the show. Hopefully, we'll get some humorous ones emailed through to us. All right. Let's start off the day, really, I guess. There's a bit of coro here. A couple of emails this week. Dr. Ron's not here to do all this sort of stuff. I've got more paper on the desk than I know what to do with. We had an email from, I think it was Michael. Michael sent us an email basically about that URL we had last week. Remember the one for all the mobile net base stations?
Anyway, he couldn't access it from wherever he was. Just goes to show that there's a lot of people listening to us who work for the Victorian government or a public service of sorts, and they couldn't actually get to the page. We've been blocked. How about that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, wouldn't let them get it. Anyway, so cell site, I think it was, .id.au. I think Dr. Ron concurred with this gentleman's thing. But yeah, have a go if you're looking for where your local mobile base station is. It's all there. We've also had a couple of other issues. Cell site. There you go. CELLSITE.nudge.id.au, unless you're working for a public organisation, which case you'll get a blocked thing, I suspect. But anyway, who else did we had some interesting correspondence, which I'm not going to enter into here, about BP and Bhopal. We were drawing parallels to that with certain things last week. So thank you for... who was that from? That was... let's find the bottom part of the email. It goes on for several pages. You know who you are. GJMCN at OptusNet. Yes. Tim Devlin was saying he couldn't get the podcast from a couple of shows too, but at least he's getting the podcast now. So, there's all sorts of interesting things been coming in during the course of this week. So, anyway. Now, let's talk about this Telstra thingy. The National Broadband Network, guys. Telstra has finally... what are they doing? They're taking the whack. They're being paid. Leased. Leased, is that the right word for it? I still sort of haven't quite got my head around what's going on, but they're coming to the party with the broadband network. Now, they had a choice, really, didn't they? Mr. Conroy was either going to forcibly, through legislation, take what they wanted, or Telstra had the choice of coming to the party, which I think is what they've done. Now, you guys were echoing some concerns over that. What are your concerns?
I just think putting it in the hands of one large conglomerate is not good for choice and competition.
Well, this is the NBN Co. that's going to be taking control of it.
Mm.
And you think that... I was reading one political commentator today. I'm just trying to sift through my notes and find it. But he was saying that this is a rollback to the pre-privatisation days of Telstra, when it was Telecom Australia. And looking at what was going on there, it was a bit of a debacle, because the fact that it was all being done in-house as opposed to being privatised.
Quite possibly, although what we're doing now is paying what's effectively a private company to do stuff on behalf of the government and no one else.
But
we're only paying them for access to infrastructure. We're only paying them to be able to put... So NBN, the government-owned entity, is paying a private company that owns the ducts and the underground infrastructure to be able to share that infrastructure with the stuff that NBN's putting in it. So instead of digging a new trench, putting in a new duct to lay the fibre in,
that's got to be
the existing
good
one.
That's got to be good, doesn't it? Because if you go outside of any of the major city centres in this country, look up in the air, you'll see a big black cable going through the street. Hello, Optus. And then underneath the ground in the same spot, there's whether it's another coax or even fibre now, there's Telstra in the pit. So we've got a dual system. But anyway, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd announced the deal pretty much, when was it? Yesterday afternoon, I think, on the steps. And in that deal, he sort of said that the government will pay $9 billion to access Telstra's infrastructure, which included their pits and ducts, to avoid this duplication you just mentioned there, Graham. A further $2 billion will go towards dealing with structural separation issues, including setting up a new company, a USO Co., which is the Universal Service Obligation, because Telstra still has to meet all of that, which is obviously applies to the delivery of standard telephone services, payphones and emergency calls handling from the 1st of July 2012. So at face value, it seems like things are going ahead. The government will also provide $100 million to Telstra to assist in the retraining and redeployment of staff that are affected by these changes. Now, that's a lot of money. So that, to me, says that there's a lot of people are going to be displaced. Workers for the company are going to be probably sacked from Telstra and hired by the NBN Co. If I'm reading between the lines, I could be way off the mark here. What do you boys reckon on that one? $100 million for Labor, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a huge company by itself.
Yeah. Anyway, NBN Company will become the wholesale supplier of last resort for fibre connections in greenfield developments from January 1, 2011 as well. Now, a greenfield development is a new housing estate. And one of those things I think Dr. Ron mentioned a few weeks back was Mr. Conroy snuck a little bill through the Senate and basically said you can't run copper into any new estates anymore, which basically stopped, I think, all the estate developments dead in their tracks. They've all stopped. There's one near us which has just stopped. So wondering whether that be part of the cabling related issue, because they're going to have to dig in fibre through all there.
But it's led to some strange situations going on where when the developer is setting up a new housing area, they find a supplier who's willing to cable the thing up, but that supplier ends up with control over those subscribers. So,
but are they do they have to go with that subscriber? I.e., if, well, Telstra no longer will be the person that's cabling it up. It'll be the NBN co, won't they?
That's what has happened in some areas, and that's what you've got to be careful to avoid happening.
Because you're wired into their cable or their copper, and that's it.
If Telstra go in and put fibre in, and there's currently no controls to say that they're forced to share it, because this is one thing that Telstra strongly objects to, then you're stuck with Telstra fibre or Nobit or nothing. So,
but in this instance, aren't they talking about sort of putting copper as end of life and slowly but surely moving everybody across to this?
Yeah, but you've got to do it in a way that preserves fair access and choice. And I'm not saying you shouldn't put fibre in, what you've got to avoid is putting one brand of fibre in and then that company having control over all those consumers.
But isn't that going to be the NBN company's fibre that's going
Well, that'll
in
be great now.
It'll be good
forward
if it is, yes, but it hasn't been in the past.
Mm.
And they're saying that what you just read was the NBN will be the provider of last resort. So if none of the others tender for it, then the NBN will go and do it. But that still means that the others can go in and get control over a whole estate.
It would be better to be the other way around, and NBN is the choice, unless there's a specific deal done between the developers and a particular telco. Mm.
Well, according to Stephen Conroy's press release, which was a joint media release, which came out yesterday, the agreement between the NBN company and Telstra, worth this $9 billion, provides for the reuse of suitable Telstra infrastructure, which we touched on earlier. One important omission was the backhaul fibre, which is going to be probably a fairly essential part of this, as it starts to roll out the new network, avoiding unnecessary infrastructure duplication. Now, it also provides for the progressive migration of customers from Telstra's copper and pay TV cable networks to the new wholesale-only fibre network to be built and operated by the NBN Co. Foxtel, when's going to happen to Foxtel? Because they're over the big black HFC cable that comes in under the street on Telstra. Are they going to go...
Well, presumably Foxtel will have
to...
buy bandwidth on the NBN like everybody else. The phrase you went past very quickly there was you said wholesale-only NBN. Now, this is Telstra's big point when they're discussing this. They're saying that they'll agree to this deal only if the NBN is restricted from offering retail services.
Well, as it should be. It's a wholesale provider to all the other telcos.
I tend to
buy
agree.
Their bandwidth on it.
It's interesting that Telstra is the company in Australia that most abuses the privilege of being both a wholesale and a retail provider in the same market, and yet they're objecting to another company that might do the same thing. I just think that's a fascinating development in the whole in the whole story, but because as you know, Telstra provide wholesale services, and they also provide resale services, and they've been caught in the past double dipping and acting in a way effectively undercutting its own wholesale customers with their retail services.
All right, there's been a few other interesting anomalies about this whole sort of thing. Once again, the minister's joint press release states $9 billion, providing for this purchase, and yet others are saying $11 billion. I'm not sure where the facts are coming from, and maybe if this is going to be underlying of the whole process from day one with this level of confusion. Goodness knows what we're going to end up with. But anyway, one of the local IT news, one of the local online services did a bit of a poll between some of their ISPs to get a bit of a...
Just before you move on, the $9 billion and the $11 billion, there's $9 billion to use the existing infrastructure and $2 billion for costs associated with regulatory reform of the sector, which is what you mentioned before with the separation of wholesale, retail and all that stuff.
Ah, that totals
the
11.
So that's where the difference between the 9 and the 11 comes from.
Okay, there we go. Knew there'd be a reason. A poll of ISPs conducted recently. They've all got different opinions. Now, it's early days yet, too, so everyone sort of hasn't sunk in yet to a lot of respects. But, some people are saying if it goes ahead, then it would appear to be a good thing on the basis that it's difficult to believe that any national infrastructure wholesaler could be as bad as Telstra. I'm not going to name names here because... I just thought that was quite humorous. Anyway, however, it also means that there's no fibre choice in Australia, just as there was no copper choice. And this particular writer thought that Australia privatised Telecom Australia because the government monopoly was horrendously inefficient. So back to where Australian Communications was 20 years ago. I think that's a bit harsh.
Mm. Yeah, I think there are markets where there needs to be a natural monopoly, like you were complaining about running two sets of identical cable down the same street. It's that sort of duplication for the sake of competition is insane and incredibly inefficient. And that's
good redundancy,
private sector
though.
That's private sector inefficiency. Compare that to a government-owned network owning the infrastructure and having private companies controlling the content that's and the services that are delivered over that infrastructure. I mean, you don't have a huge problem with the government operating the road network, for example.
Well, some do, but yes.
Yeah, some do. Well, and we certainly have a couple of privately owned roads in several around the country. But in general, the government owns the road network and private operators drive their vehicles over it and use it as a way of doing business and driving the economy. This is a similar thing. You wouldn't want privately owned, you wouldn't want an Optus road and a Telstra road, and depending on what a Ford road and a Holden road, and you can only drive your Ford on the Ford road. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's there's a point where you've got to have one that everything's delivered over, and that's what the NBN can do.
Bandwidth in it, though, because using your analogy with private roads, the reason you take the toll road is it's faster generally. Although
yes,
recent experience,
not all the time,
yes.
But you know, generally speaking, you take the toll road because it's better, faster. Whatever.
Yeah, you certainly wouldn't argue, even though the toll road's better and faster, that you should duplicate every road and have a Ford road and a Holden road.
No.
But look at mobile broadband for that example, then. Everyone's built a so-called road up there, and of course some roads go incredibly slowly and some absolutely fly. And yet, as you say, JD, you pay that toll premium if you choose to get there a little bit faster.
That's right. So you want to go national broadband network? Fantastic. You want to go Telstra private? Well, you know, you pay your price, you get the better deal, hopefully.
It's going to be an interesting space in the next few years, isn't it, as this all unfolds and
certainly is.
Unravels itself. Now, I guess one of the good market tests is what happens to the Telstra share price. Now, it's been up and down all over the place today.
It's been up and up all over the place today, really.
It has. Telstra share soared this morning in response to a deal which ended the telco's damaging impasse with the federal government over the national broadband network. Anyway, the agreement is also a much-needed policy win for the federal government, but it did cost taxpayers this extra $2 billion of sweeteners, which you were talking about. So, it's been an interesting ride, and it's probably not going to settle out for the next week or so. Is it?
It's taken them years to get to this point, so...
Yeah.
Well, Telstra was...
There's definitely battle still to be fought.
I don't know what it currently is, but I think it bottomed out in the last few weeks at around about $3 a share. I think it even broke sub $3 there for a while. So it can only be good for Telstra shareholders, I would have thought. And
well, Telstra shareholders seem to think so. I mean, over the whole day, they're 11 cents up on what they were. That's 3.4%. So that's a big movement in a day. 211 million shares traded today.
And more importantly, people that want to be Telstra shareholders.
Well, that's right. That's effectively what that means. Yes. Mm. That's 211 shares that someone wants to buy that they didn't want yesterday. Mm. Yeah.
Well, she did spike first thing this morning, as you would have expected, and then plateaued out a little bit during the course of the day, according to the graph I'm looking at here on Google at the moment. So, look, it'll be interesting. It'll be an up-and-down rocky road ride until things sort of settle itself down, until we start seeing fibre actually being deployed, I guess, in regional, rural, and right here in the big smoke, too. So, anyway, so that was the share deal, I think, which, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because there's still a lot of angry investors out there that lost a lot of money when they invested into the T1s and T2s and things, because it's never reached those halcyon days since, really, has it? So,
well, T1 did, but T2 never really got there.
No. No, it didn't. Now, let's look at the other side of politics. The Coalition is vowing to scrap this $11 billion NBN Telstra deal.
Oh, good.
If they win power. Like, now, where does this leave Australians when you go to the polls in probably, you know, towards the end of October, maybe November?
Well, this will leave Australia without a clear plan to avoid the duplication of services throughout the country. This is what will happen. So you're asking for an environment where services will be duplicated. There'll be wasted resources running, you know, different brands of fibre down the same trenches. There'll be wasted resources with not having a central control over the network. It's got to be bad.
I mean, that's the obvious outcome. I guess some of the positives is that you might get a bit more innovation. So the WiMAXs and those other types of carriers that Andrew certainly spoke about when he came back from the States, which aren't prominent at the moment, might become prominent in certain areas.
Well, they might, but that would be, in my opinion, that would be a bad thing if we start running the main bulk, the main service of internet provision as wireless over the over what's an incredibly rare resource. I mean, you think that land or space to put cables is a rare commodity that you're in short supply. Yeah, radio spectrum is incredibly scarce resource, and you just can't build more of it.
And we're about to fill it up with 3D TV.
And if you fill it up with duplicated services that should be running on fibre under the ground, then you're starting off on the wrong foot entirely. Wireless is not the answer. I've said that before.
No, but there can be innovations in other technologies as well.
Oh, certainly can. And wireless is the correct technology to fill in where the cables can't go.
We should also say from the outset too that this deal that's been done is subject to regulatory approval. Obviously, all those that need to have a go in there, like the ACCC and people like that, will have their say in it. And don't forget the shareholders of Telstra.
It's also subject to Telstra getting their way on some of these other issues,
yes.
These regulatory issues.
And as David Thodey was saying, who is the boss of Telstra at the moment, there's a very significant amount of work still needing to be done on a lot of complex issues. Mm-hmm. We've got plenty of water to flow underneath this bridge. But anyway, can I just add from a personal point of view too that we've got to really seriously get high-speed broadband at a reasonable cost into our houses. An example on the weekend is my kids managed to use over 2 gig of bandwidth just watching ABC's iView on the media server. And like I'm with an ISP that I'm not metered for on that sort of service.
So you're unmetered and they still manage
I'm unmetered on iiNet.
That's
Thank
impressive.
You very much, Mr. Malone. They on the wet, cold, rainy weekend that we've just had in Melbourne.
Presumably, if you know how much you've used, you're metered, you're not charged for it.
Yes, yeah. It's unmetered, so we don't pay for it. Sorry, did I mislead? No, anyway. You know what I mean? It's not part of my normal download. Let's leave it at that. But yes, it was good. 2 gig. Yes. 2 gig of bandwidth on watching all those ABC3 programs that they love to watch. So keep that in mind. You need that coming into your house. And that's the way we're going to start getting our media, from far and wide. It'll all pop in that way.
Well, at the moment, our house is without a roof and a TV antenna, so that's the only way I get to see TV.
I drove past your big green tarp the other day. It's very impressive up there. Yes.
Should be in it with a wind.
Winter in Melbourne and a green tarp on the roof. No, thank you very
much. Fantastic combination.
And don't forget, this network we're talking about, this is not just for homes. This is for businesses that are going to operate in a digital world. Your business, Andrew, is one of those where you can deliver your product, but you know, to your business customers over the internet. So the faster you've got upload and download speeds, you know, to your business premises, the more efficient your business becomes. And there's a lot of businesses like that around the country where, I mean, one thing Australia does very well is these sorts of creative endeavours where we're creating content or creating
well, it's the virtual cottage industry, isn't it? Running out of your backyard or your home or...
Absolutely.
Well, you can appear to be big business from, as you say, a small portal somewhere in the middle of nowhere, if you know what I mean.
And there's plenty of businesses around that are maxing out their ADSL2 connections, just trying to get their work done. There's, it's definitely an area where the proper infrastructure development is going to be a huge benefit to the economy and well into the future.
I think also businesses have to look at utilising the cloud in a way which also manages to keep the bandwidth down rather than sort of like, you know, doing a lot of backups across, you know, fairly expensive fibre networks. Utilise the cloud one way, if you know what I mean. Everyone can access it back up there in the cloud and pull it down and make local copies if you need to.
Absolutely,
like,
but businesses won't do that unless they've got an inexpensive, highly reliable, very fast network to do it on. And that's where this comes in again.
It's also interesting too. Telstra released, I think about 2 or 3 weeks back, we mentioned on the show, a 10 megabit synchronous service.
Right. Last time I was in, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so there you go. So yeah, they've also got to look at that. Obviously, how they choose to do that.
This is Ethernet. This is Ethernet connections.
Is it?
Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, good. One of our listeners on the chat makes a very good point there that the shareholders for the vote for the NBN with Telstra, apparently there's a year to wait, obviously, the next shareholder meeting, because I think they just had it recently, didn't they?
Right.
So, that it's sounding good. But
so, it's a nice announcement.
We've got an election to come before things are really going to start happening, and then goodness knows who's going to win, and goodness knows
what's
going to happen after that. So,
it's a good little bargaining point for Telstra to use over that year.
It's a bit like a mining tax, really, isn't it? This is what we're going to do if maybe.
Oh, no, we don't like that regulation. We're going to stop you using our trenches. We don't like that new thing you're talking
about. There's a surcharge on your particular part of the trench.
Yeah.
The Australian Council of Trade Unions has welcomed Telstra's agreement with the NBN too, calling the $11 billion deal good news for the country's telecommunications workers. Well, there you go. So they're obviously, it's a bit of a plus for the labour economy if the unions are coming on board and backing it too.
Well, I guess I think there's going to be more employment, and there was that figure you mentioned before, 111 million, was it?
Somebody's going to get out there in a truck and pull this cable through somewhere.
Absolutely.
And, settling down where it's going to be has got to be a good thing so they can actually get it down to the business of laying the stuff.
That'd be helpful, actually. We've been waiting for that for a while.
Exactly, man. Yeah.
Didn't they do that in Tassie? A few people got electrocuted and they stopped? Anyway.
By laying it through the,
through the, what, the power grid?
Through the insulation.
The dodgy roofs, yeah.
No, that's right. Yes, I remember all that. How we forget, really, don't we? So where's this going to leave ADSL, the ADSL copper technology that we're currently using? Is that slowly going to be phased out?
Yep.
And what about, you got your
ADSL is a great fill-in technology. It's a way to use 100-year-old telephone cables to do, 19th century telephone cables.
They're not 100-year-old.
They are 100 years old.
I pay $39 a month to make sure mine's spick and span. And you're telling me it's 100 years old?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's old technology doing a 21st century job. It's great that we can do it, that we can get, 20 megabits per second down a phone line that was only ever designed to carry voice. But, it's fill-in technology. It's a stopgap measure.
But it will take a while for them to replace it.
It'll certainly take a while, but we got to bear in mind that it's on the way out. The ADSL is the faxes as compared to emails.
Fax. I remember those. Someone asked me for a fax the other day. Sorry.
Did you laugh?
Yeah, I did.
We've still got a fax machine in the office.
Some organisations still have them. Yeah,
and that's it. But that's what I'm saying. The ADSL will be around for a long time. Like faxes, but they're the old technology.
Still use dial-up, I believe.
Oh, really?
Mm. Only when Telstra still sell it, so someone must.
But don't they use it as a fallback thing if your ADSL falls in a heap and you've got to have internet? You can use dial-up.
Well, that's going out. ADSL's become a little bit too reliable. Nobody bothers to set up their backup modems anymore.
Mm.
People provide, some ISPs provide a backup dial-up service, but have you got a dial-up modem? No.
No.
And the other thing, too, it's relatively cheap and ineffective.
Ineffective, yes.
Relatively cheap and effective just to have another backup DSL server sitting there on another port. So if one falls down, it moves across automatically and seamlessly to the other one. And, of course, that's what I think Internode were doing when we were talking about, was it Internode? IINet, one of the two, were thinking about doing a dual modem service to double the speed and double bandwidth in both directions. So, there's a classic example of a redundancy in a leg. So for business, it's perfect. And the cost,
I've got one customer who has exactly that. They've got two ADSL lines. On a normal day, if everything's working properly, they're a membership organisation. They've got a huge number of members, not very many staff in their office. So they're always doing these huge mail outs. So they've got one ADSL line that purely carries mail, nothing else but email.
Yeah.
And they've got a separate ADSL line for all their other, you know, web browsing and remote access and all those other businesses.
Gee, they must spam a lot.
No, they're communicating directly with their members.
Whole ADSL service for email.
Oof. They're communicating directly with their members. It's purely the fact that, when they send out a bulk email to, you know, their 5,000 members or whatever it might happen to be, that, they don't upset their other business functions on their main connection.
Speaking of bulk emailing, I had the pleasure of speaking with Carol Whitelock and a chap on the name of Peter on ABC Radio last Friday, which I did tweet about at the time. I don't know whether any of our listeners managed to tune in, but Peter was really good. He's very dry, very tech Luddite-ish type sort of gentleman. But anyway, one of the things that caught his imagination was the new ACMA's line for spam SMS reporting. It's a simple matter that I can't remember if we touched on this or not last week, but
yeah, we mentioned it.
Yeah, yeah. If you get spam to your mobile phone.
I hate spam on my mobile phone.
Spam on your mobile... What?
Spam SMS.
You got a lot of those, didn't you, recently?
I did get... I had a big problem for a while with that, yeah.
Just sort of forward it to ACMA on their spam SMS reporting number, which is 0429-999-888. Once again, that number, 0429-999-888. And I don't know what they'll do with it, but if they do what they do with normal spam, they do act on it and... Certain people get raps across certain knuckles, and some people actually get fined for it and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, ultimately, hopefully, they'll end up prosecuting. They'll track down who sent the message and who they went to, and they'll contact a small proportion of the people that reported and said, "Hey, would you like to actually make a formal complaint about this so we can put these take these people to court and fine them for it?"
Mm. All right, and just before we do go to the break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about streaming video and audio content. I've got a little demo I'm going to do in the studio. So live radio and demonstrations traditionally don't go well together, but we're going to give it a whirl anyway, so it could be humorous radio. Before we do go, Internode has introduced an unlimited ADSL 2 Plus package. Now, using the word unlimited here, I haven't really delved beautifully into their unlimited description, how they define it, but let's just say this. For $300-odd, a naked DSL service with peaks of 24 meg, you know, all the normal sales pitch that goes with an ADSL 2 service. Basically, what they're doing, no shaping, no nothing, just $309 a month for a line. Go for whatever you can do.
Unlimited download.
Undo your damage, yeah. And I haven't read the UAC, so I'm not sure about that.
No time frames that you can be unlimited, but during business hours forget about it or anything like that?
No. Okay. They're just saying it's just good for gold. So unless they've got something hidden somewhere, which I hope they haven't, because Internode are traditionally a very consumer-friendly ISP, then that's probably a good thing. It's $300 for absolutely everything, because that's pricey It's fairly pricey, but then again, I guess it's volume in numbers, isn't it? The more people that sign up to that, some people aren't going to use 30-odd terabytes every so often.
As much as they can suck down the pipe.
Yeah. No, exactly. You know, and peer-to-peer traditionally doesn't happen at work, but then again, it does in some places. But yeah, anyway, we won't go there. That's Internode's new bizzo, which I think is pretty good. Anyway, what else? Let's tease with the fact that this new iOS 4... Tonight our time or tomorrow our time?
Tonight our time, I believe.
Is it? Mm. We'll talk about that. That's the new operating system for the iPhone. Are you going to get a new iPhone, JD? Or?
I am.
You are?
I need to talk to the powers that be. But
well, we're going to talk about micro-SIMs and stuff of that too. That's a really interesting thing too.
Now, that will be a problem for me because I use a company SIM in
my
phone.
You do? We're going to talk about that.
And I have to trim it down with a nail file or something.
Oh, is that how you do it?
Apparently.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
Was that Humdinger? Rip Schnorter?
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Not that type of
guy. You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective. Connected.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Depending on when you're listening to this podcast or radio show, chances are iOS 4, the new operating system for the iPhone, has got bugs in it released. JD, before we went to the break, you were saying that this is a download of great interest to you.
Well, it is. It does all sorts of good stuff.
Yes.
So I get a spell checker.
Yes.
I get the focus my camera. I get all sorts of good stuff.
Now, obviously, it comes pre-bundled, pre-packaged with the new iPhone that's obviously being released in the United States imminently.
At some point, 600,000 orders in the first 24 hours or something similar.
That's not bad. What should we talk about first, the phone or the operating system?
Oh, take your pick.
All right, let's talk about the operating system because everyone, that's applicable to anyone. If you've got a 3GS or a 3, anything before that, I don't think you can load it up on. But if, actually, let me just check this. I have this thing. iOS 4 works with iPhone 4, iPhone 3GS and iPhone 3G. Not all features are compatible with all devices.
And there's no news there. They've always dropped support for one of the machines as they've moved forward. Although most of the hackers will then re-enable it somehow or other.
I'm sure they will. That's just by nature of the beast, isn't it?
Now, there is a gyroscope in the new iPhone 4, which is pretty hard to hack because it's a bit of hardware.
What's a gyroscope?
Well, it determines which position your phone's in. So not only will it know where you are, it will now know what position you've put the phone in. So upside down,
pointing
upwards.
But doesn't it do that anyway with the thing when you hold it up in the air and look at the planets and stuff like that? That's not a gyroscope.
No, that's cheating. No, it's not a gyroscope.
Oh, isn't it?
No.
Okay. I like those apps. They're really good.
So the idea is with the gyroscope that you'll be able to use your phone as a controller. So those people that play with Wii controllers already and you point your controller at the TV and magically that points at the TV and something shows up, so your iPhone will now do that.
So this is different to the accelerometer that a lot of devices have, or is it the same?
It's different because the gyroscope is a different type of technology, but I guess it's the same outcome, probably a bit more sensitive.
Right.
Multitasking.
Can I ask another question about Apple, the iPhone operating system. Have we got voice dialing? Is that all?
Yeah, it's been there for a while.
It's in the 3GS natively, and you can hack the 3 to do it.
So we've only had it since the previous version phone, the 3GS.
Yes, in the default operating system, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
Multitasking. This is probably the biggest thing. Apart from your spell check, obviously, the multitasking has got a lot going for it, I think.
Well, you see, I've got multitasking already.
Yeah, we all do, but only
because
if
I've jailbroken it and it works and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. But now they're talking about a different multitasking. I remember in Steve's announcement when he was talking about it, that the way they're doing it is I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but they're basically putting to sleep programs that are not being used in the foreground. So they're still active, so you can get back to them relatively quickly.
Yeah, my understanding is a bit thin, but as I understand it, there's a couple of different types of multitasking in the new OS. So,
yeah, yeah.
So there's a general type of multitasking where it sits in the background and is active all the time, like your email's checking all the time or your phone's waiting for the call all the time. Then there's those that turns the application off, but it's available to you, which is if you've got a jailbroken iPhone 3GS, it's the way that sort of works at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it's a rapid change. But there's a third type, which is where the system is set up so that it will receive notifications and then wake up the application. So, for example, if you're using something like Skype, now I'm not sure if Skype's actually enabled for this, but it's an example of a program that could use the feature. So Skype's not running at all, but a part of its code is that's waiting to receive calls. And when that part of the code sees the call coming, then the rest of the program wakes up and takes the
call. This is similar to what presumably the way that the push email technology has worked for a while in the iPhone, where it receives a notification and wakes up.
And so all of these processes have been in the iPhone operating system for probably ever, since it started, but now they're actually giving programmers the access to the API, to the coding.
Yeah, API scripts. Being the...
Advanced Programming Interface?
That'll do.
Something similar to
It's the way that programmers talk to the sort of the built-in functions of the system.
Yeah.
Yes. It's what they don't want Flash to do.
Now, presumably the reason they haven't done it in the past is because if every developer writes a program that goes into background and keeps running, the device would slow down and
grind to a halt.
Unusable. Yeah. Mm. Whereas now, by controlling it, by only having limited ways of doing it, and not, you know, not completely open slather, and the new faster processes that we can deal with it and have it work.
That's right. And the new iPhone's got the A4 chip in it, same as the iPad, apparently. So it's meant to be bigger, faster, stronger, all the rest of it. So it's got a bit more grunt.
Well, yeah. Well, it's an amazing thing with this technology, how much more processing power you get in the smaller box.
And look, it's older news, but you know, comparing my iPhone 3 to Andrew's 3GS is quite significant in itself. And now we're talking about the next generation again. Yep. So that's why I want to upgrade.
I was just looking at a dark splat on our chat. I said there's no multitasking on the 3G, which I assume is your
answer. Oh, yes, there is.
There is? Well, there you go.
I can show you.
Oh, no, but not with the operating system.
Oh, not officially, no.
No.
There's a lot of things that aren't official.
No, but that's an important point. If you've got an iPhone 3G, putting the new iOS 4 on it won't give you multitasking. But if you've got a 3GS, putting the iOS 4 operating system on it will give you multitasking.
I'm not quite sure which versions are getting which features, but yeah, something
I'm
like that.
I'm pretty sure that's right, that the 3GS gets multitasking, but the 3G doesn't.
I think that's exactly the point that was made in our chat, which Dark Splat was talking about.
Yeah. Mm.
So multitasking is probably the biggest. We're now going to get some folders in this operating system so we can
get them if you're jailbroken.
Oh, absolutely.
I've already got them, so yeah. No news.
Even better mail. Well,
Has Apple just been watching what the jailbreakers have been doing with the phone and saying, well, that's a good idea, we need to make this part of the operating system?
I think they've always been a good idea. So, right. You know, cut and paste has always been a good idea, but they didn't want to do it because it was going to be resource intensive and it was the first version of the phone, you've got to have a reason to upgrade and, you know, pay more money, that sort of stuff.
I wonder if the pure technology behind making telephone calls is going to be any better in the new phone. I noticed
actually that making calls, that'd be really handy,
making and using telephone calls.
Are you saying that it's not a good telephone?
Correct.
Right.
Are you reading between the lines? Because yes. You've read beautifully between the lines. Yeah, they're not the best in telephones. I think if you really wanted to, if you spent a lot of time on the phone.
That was my big gripe with my Windows phone, though. I thought these were supposed to be better.
Well, let's wait and see when JD comes in next week with his brand new iPhone 4.
They're not going to be in Australia till about August.
Oh, aren't you going to get one shipped? No, actually, you can't do that.
Well, you're
that,
not over
you?
There. I can't get you to buy me one.
No, I do know people over there, but that's all right. The thing about it, too, is I think you can't order and have it shipped to another country. You've got to order it through the... If you're in Australia, you've got to order it through the Australian store, and it will come on the day
there are ways around it, but when the iPad was released, most of them got closed down, which is a bit of a shame. Mm.
All right, so it's going to be a bit of fun, I think, iOS 4. What about jailbreaks for it? Is there any out yet?
Apparently there is. I just did a bit of a search. So the dev team are already out with a jailbreak. Now, it's not perfect, so it's not quite as clean as the Black Rain one that's available at the moment. But it does work, apparently, so that's all good.
Okay. Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So I'm going to let it sit tight for a little bit. But the biggest hindrance I see in going from the 3GS to the 4 is this goddamn SIM. Cut down SIM, which is not even compatible with the iPad, which means that Apple have stopped people using their extra bandwidth, which they've probably paid for, in their other devices. It's clever enough to realize that it's a SIM for a data application, not a voice application. So it says, I'm not going to share anything with you. So obviously, I reckon that's a smart within the device, not within the SIM. Or the SIMs would be a pretty dumb animal, I would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But, it's going to be a bit of a blocker for a lot of people because, you know, as I said, I use my company SIM in this phone and there's no way I'm going to be starting to trim it down for the next iPhone.
Well, what happens if you want to stick it back in the old one?
That's right.
It's not going to fit, is it?
No. Someone will find out.
So, really, this is going to put the iPhone in the hands of the telcos, really, aren't they? Because you're going to have to buy a new service, or if you move your number into it, there's no going back to the old one if one gets faulty. And let's face it, we've all got plenty of junk phones in the drawers. Gosh, come around to our place, there's thousands of them there.
Well, look, admittedly,
so phone fails, you can just whack your SIM in the other and off you go.
I mean, I'm obviously a bit of a fan of the Apple stuff. One of the interesting things about the iPhone, though, is the fact that you can upgrade it past its original operating system. So you can put iPhone 4 on your iPhone 3, for example. There's not many other telephones where you can upgrade the operating system that easily.
That's a good point.
So, you can junk it, but it's actually still worthwhile using if you're using it for basic features like telephony and SMS and not much else as the years go by.
I'm sure the telcos will come out with a workaround, or someone will.
Someone will.
So you've got a little SIM adapter so you can plug a 4G, one of these 4 SIMs into a 3 or something, and a bit of sneaky software to trick it into thinking, well, you can get that anyway for a jailbroken iPhone. You can make it think it's working anywhere, really, can't you, these days?
Mine does, yeah.
Absolutely. So Anyway,
and the issue with the micro SIM is you can always turn a micro SIM into a full into a mini SIM. Because there's a little adapter you can just plug it into.
What's a mini SIM? Is that the normal SIM?
The normal SIM. That's what I'm saying. The SIM that we've got in our phones.
Oh, that's what they call a USIM. USIM.
USIM, yeah. Is it? The micro SIM will go in a little adapter and fit in that because it's pin compatible. The pin pad is exactly the same.
Well, maybe that's going to be the solution. Just check on eBay for all these little adapters that'll come up for 30 cents.
Well, there were lots
ago.
Of them when the iPhone first came out to get around the carrier lock. And so I can't remember the name of them, True SIM or something like that. And you had to put your SIM inside this little carrier and slide it into your phone, and it then made it universal so you could use your Telstra phone on an Optus network, et cetera, that sort of thing. So they'll be on the market again.
There's lots of discussion going on in our chat about it. If you want to come along and see what the guys are saying, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. iBooks, iPhone 3G users are not getting that as well. Oh, goodness, I never knew that. Anyway, thanks, Warlock. He's up there. Brad's there. He's talking about stuff. Anyway, let's talk about Apple's Mobile Me update. Did you know Apple has posted an update for this service, releasing a new version of its mobile device syncing and management software package, as well as new tools to help users locate their lost and stolen iPhones? Now, I thought they had this out for a while, but obviously...
It's been there.
Yeah. Well, the Mobile Me update adds a number of features to the suite's email software. Updated includes an additional SSL security layer, as well as fast performance and better filtering of junk mail. So, do you use Mobile Me?
No.
Okay, moving on. I like straight and direct points. Yes.
Now, Mobile Me synchronises with your home computer or whatever.
Yeah, any Apple product basically. Will
you can do it with software and stuff, but that's just the Apple suite for syncing.
Yeah, and
it's the same as Microsoft Mesh and all the other things.
All right. All right, just before we go to View from the Couch this week, let's talk about the Mac Mini.
Yes.
The new Mac Mini came out, which is its lowest price computer.
Just sort of appeared.
The Mac Mini. Yes, it did. It's $999 Australian dollars is the price, apparently. And Apple said the product's power consumption would be less than 10 watts when it's doing nothing. I'll try turning off of the PowerPoint, then it'll be doing absolutely no power consumption. Then Apple, come on. The new Mac Mini, which is 7.7 inches square and 1.4 inches, has an HDMI port with a new SD card slot, which allows transfers of files from a digital camera. They've opened up the GUI. You can get something into it.
This is a Mac Mini.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Not an Apple TV.
No. Oh, well, actually, that's a point, isn't it? Yeah.
It looks like one, mind you.
It does, doesn't it? So you can put your digital camera pics in there. It has an NVIDIA GeForce 320 meg graphics processor. That sounds fairly fast for a little device such as that.
There's a lot of rumors around Apple getting into the gaming market again.
Is there?
Mm.
Missing out? Is Sony PlayStations and Xbox 360s?
Oh, I don't think it's missing out anymore. I think and we've talked about this before, I think the success of the App Store and the number of games now that you can download for your iPhone and your iPad, and presumably at some point in the future, you'll be able to download to your Mac Mini or your Apple TV or whatever it turns into.
Mm. Well, the HDMI port, I think, is going to be the big seller in this, because that means you can now plug this device straight into your flat-screen telly and watch something from it.
Well, there's two things you need. You need the 5.1 out so that you can get your surround sound, and you need HDMI. And the Apple TV provided it, and the Mac Mini didn't until now. So
okay.
Huge upgrade from that point of view. So people that were sort of thinking, and I'm certainly one of them, no, I won't get a Mac Mini just yet to be my my set-top box because it doesn't give me HD output. Well, now it does.
Excellent. Going to get one?
Probably not.
No. Okay. All right, let's talk about streaming, shall we? We've started a bit of a trend in the last few weeks on Tech Talk Radio about getting material from hard drives off the internet straight to your new big flat-screen television set, or even anywhere, to an iPad, your iGadget, for want of a better term. And Adam's weighing into the equation in just a few moments. But before we go to Adam, T-Box got launched, which is Telstra's new little box that solves all your problems in the living room as well. It's a bit of a bundle. I don't know. They're going to compete with Foxtel in a big way here. Because if you get this little device through some of the bundle Telstra products, you get all sorts of other things. Telstra TV, they're becoming a content provider. See, he who has the content keys is king these days. So they're trying to upsell it, and everyone's giving a bit of content. It's like Jim Malone on iNet's giving away the iView for free. It's a good choice if you want an ISP and you want to watch lots of ABC TV on demand.
Absolutely.
Give you the tip. 2 gig a day. My goodness. Anyway, so this new T-Box has come out, a personal video recorder. The bundle includes 25 gig of bandwidth, bundled at $109 a month on a 24-month contract. Be aware of the contracts, everybody. A lot will happen in 2 years. We'll have new governments. We'll have new, probably, delivery platforms, maybe.
New technologies will come out in that time,
absolutely.
Yeah. Prices will drop.
So the Telstra 100-gig Ultimate Bundle, $139, also on a contract, and a 250-gig Ultimate Bundle, $159. So it's IPTV, very much here and now. And depending if you've got a gaming console, and depending on what you want to watch, there's all sorts of other options that we can talk about too. So, I don't know. Anyone? Do you reckon anyone? I can't think of anyone that I would know that would buy a Telstra T-Box just quietly.
No.
Well, I'm still trying to work out the market for it, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I think you need to get into the established back-end servers. So iTunes now, I mean, you know, it's been around for so long and it's so ingrained, and Apple's strategy of pushing it out there with the iPods and everything else ever since has worked really well in their favour. Mm. Whereas the poor old Telstra site's pretty lame.
Yeah. You know, I've just been corrected. M is just M, not Meg. Sorry. Right. Thank you, Warlock. See, you learn things on this program. All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. We're about to hear Adam Turner's view from the couch this week. View from the sick ward is probably more the point. And this is his catch on the new streaming stuff. And yet again, a new bundle of, another bit of software you can add to your mix if you're looking to getting streaming video, streaming audio, streaming anything really, webcams will even do, around your house, around your phone, and even a little bit beyond. So check this out. It's good.
There's been a lot of talk about streaming media of late on Tech Talk Radio, so I thought it was time to throw in my two cents. I've spent a lot of time playing with streaming video gear lately, both clients and servers. What I'm looking for is the best way to take my eclectic digital video library and stream it to various devices around the house. There are quite a few ways to perform such tricks, but I'm still deciding which is best for me. The scenario I'm working on is streaming video from the Windows 7 Media Center in my lounge room to the Rumpus room downstairs, so the kids can watch a spot of Play School in the afternoon, plus DVDs, DivXs and MPEG-4s from the Media Center library. There's an old CRT television in the Rumpus room, plus my old Zensonic Z330 DVD player. There's also an Ethernet port alongside the television coming from an Airport Express, which I use for streaming music for the kids. And there's also 802.11b, g and n coverage down there. Like I said, there's more than one way to skin this cat. I could hook up a PlayStation 3 as a media player, or an Xbox 360 as a media player or a media extender, but I don't really want to buy a games console just for that. I also like to build a fairly open system so it's easy to add new devices in different rooms around the house, which sort of kills the Xbox Media Center extender idea. I could put an old PC in the Rumpus room, running the Windows MCE interface or a third-party interface such as Boxy or Xbox Media Center, but I'm trying to keep it simple, and adding another computer to the situation is generally not the keep it simple answer. An Apple Mac Mini might be a good option, but I'm stingy and it seems like too much to spend on something I don't really need. The Slingbox is very cool for streaming media around the house and across the internet, but it's also overkill for my needs. It's expensive and it's not as flexible as a few things I'll touch on later. A hacked Apple TV running Xbox Media Center would be perfect for the job, except Apple, in its wisdom, has only blessed it with HDMI component output, so it's useless for connecting to an old television. A better option could be the far cheaper and more versatile WDTV live streaming media box. I tested one a while ago for PC Authority, and it's a very impressive Swiss Army knife media player. Playback of Windows 7 digital television recordings looked a bit pixelated over UPnP, but I was told a firmware upgrade would fix this. The WDTV Live also offers Samba networking, which is a nice option as it tends to offer better video quality than using a DLNA server on the PC end. Now, to further complicate things, like Andrew, I've got an iPad and a few iPhones lying around the house, which make great media players if you can get content to them. As Andrew says, Air Video is a great streaming video app for the iPad, which transcodes video on the fly. It comes with free server software for your computer, but it only streams to iGadgets, so it's not really the flexible solution I'm looking for. TVersity, on the other hand, is a very impressive streaming media server that's extremely flexible, although it won't transcode for the iPad and the iPhone on the fly. I know I'm being fussy, but I'm looking for the one streaming media system that can be all things to all men and all devices. I want any member of the household to be able to switch on any gadget in any room and easily access any kind of content without needing to worry about compatibility issues. It's a big ask, but I don't want to bog down my media center with a dozen different streaming media applications. So far, the closest thing I've found to a perfect solution is the free streaming media system called Orb, O-R-B. Orb has been around for a few years and has evolved into quite an impressive service. It can stream content from your home computer, Mac or Windows, over the web to any computer via the browser, letting you access your entire library from anywhere on any machine. It will even stream DVD VOD files, but not the DVD menus. If your home computer has TV tuners, Orb will stream recordings and even live broadcast. I've been using it with TiVo's home networking software to automatically copy files off my TiVo to the media center and then convert them to iFriendly formats and then use Orb to stream these converted files. Orb also offers an iPhone app with everything converted to iFriendly formats on the fly. There's a limited free iPhone app, or you can buy the full version for $12.99. The picture quality on the iPhone is very good. It's even quite watchable over 3G. The fact it runs over Wi-Fi and 3G makes it a handy way to watch video on the train, assuming you've got a generous mobile download allowance. US users are complaining that the latest Orb iPhone update has removed the ability to watch live TV over 3G, but it seems to work fine on my iPhone over Telstra's Next G. It wouldn't play on an iPad 3G using an Optus Micro SIM card, but that could be due to Optus network conditions. If such a 3G limitation was introduced by Apple for playing live TV, it would be just one more reason to invest in a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot such as a MiFi or Netcom's MyZone. Last week, Orb's makers finally upgraded the iPhone app to run full screen on the iPad, and it looks fantastic. A brilliant addition to any arsenal of iPad applications. The icing on the cake is that Orb's server software is also a DLNA server, so it can stream video around your home to a variety of devices such as all the ones I listed earlier. You can even use the browser interface or iPhone app over your home network with traffic streamed directly across your network rather than out over the internet and back. This creates all kinds of possibilities when you combine an iPhone with an iPad speaker dock. I can stream music around the house to places such as the bathroom or the balcony without the need to invest in more airport expresses. It also means I can easily stream content at someone else's house. The other day I had lunch at a mate's house and I used his notebook to play a few Wiggles CDs for our kids to listen to, streamed from my computer at home. It's still early days, but it looks like Orb is what I've been looking for. A streaming video system that's all things to all gadgets. It doesn't tie me down to any one operating system, format, or device. Initially, I was looking for something that was device agnostic for streaming video to the rumpus room for the kids. In Orb, it looks like I've found a whole lot more.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, there you go.
That's one streaming center to rule the world.
I think so. Now, once I heard Adam's view from the couch, view from the sick bed.
He sounded awful, didn't
Adam,
he?
Adam, get well soon, mate.
Yeah, at the start I thought his batteries had gone flat, but he didn't sound too good.
Yeah, anyway, I thought I'd give this Orb a bit of a run for its money. Now, let me tell you how impressed I have been with it. I thought I'd try the unthinkable and actually do a live demonstration in the studio.
If you hear silence for the next 10 seconds.
Of this audio. Now, what I'm going to do is, I've plugged my mobile phone, and I wish I could type the right numbers already. I've plugged my mobile phone into the said radio station console here. And it's like an iPod-y sort of thing. And what I thought I'd do is I'd connect into my server at home and play some music.
Okay, then.
Using Orb. So what I've done is I loaded up the Orb client. I went to the App Store and I downloaded it and put it on my machine. Now, there's two versions. There's a $12 one, which Adam mentioned, and there is a free version. The free version's really good if you like shuffled music.
Right.
If you want to particularly want to play something.
I was going to ask, do you get to choose or not?
You do if you pay the $12 version. Right. Now, not only do you get to stream audio and video, you also get to stream webcams and pictures off your server at home or off your shared folders at home. So it's really quite good. Now, this works. I'm just trying it to my iGadget. It works really well to my other iGadget. That's the iPad at home as well.
Yeah.
But what it means is you can actually be anywhere in the world and watch and listen to media off your particular server or even share media off your particular server. So bear with me here while I try and do this, but what I've done is I've selected the drive at home, which has got some music on it, and I'll go down to a and the reason why I'm using music because you hopefully you'll be able to get a bit of an indication of how good it streams, but I'm going to select this Crowded House track here in one of their new albums. So as I scroll through here, it's a track. I'll pick one at random.
Hold on, new album, Crowded House.
Yeah, it's a new Crowded House album. Yeah, they went off and did their thing as well. Now, I've just pressed the play button now, so I'll push this fader up and we'll see what happens. Hopefully, it'll kick in fairly shortly. It says it's buffering. And here it is. Now, this is coming in. What you're hearing now is music off the iPhone streamed over 3G from a server which is approximately, I don't know, 10 kilometres away.
Could be on the other side of the world.
Could be on the other side of the world. And this is the quality of the music that you're actually hearing. Now, that's not bad, is it?
That's impressive.
This is all.
Yeah. What phone carrier is that? Is that iPhone of yours connected to?
The cheap and nasty 3.
But it's Wi-Fi here, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm using 3. I'm using Next G.
That's no, definitely...
Next 3G. G. I'm using 3G to prove this point.
So that's coming over the 3 wireless broadband network.
It is indeed, yeah. But that quality is very listenable too. I'm even putting it to air.
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to that in my really good Sennheiser headphones, and as the rest of you are, and yeah, that is listenable. That's not bad. I'm fussy about audio.
Exactly. So when Adam went and told me about that, I thought, wow, I've got to give this a try. And so much that I've thanks Tim, I'll just pull him down a bit there. But so much that I decided to actually pull some material across on the $12 one and see how well it went. So I invested in my $12. Mm. And away it went. Now,
how quickly do you use up your usage allowance on 3 doing that?
Yeah, the $1 million question. I'll let you know once I've been playing with it for a bit of time.
Oh, okay.
But
do you know what bandwidth it's using? How?
Well, the thing is, it adjusts for bandwidth. I was telling JD on the way out.
Does it tell you? Does it say?
It gives you a choice of how much bandwidth you can use, whether you're on a wireless network where it gives you maximum bandwidth, or whether you're on a 3G network, or even an edge network where it pulls bandwidth right down.
Mm.
Now, I tried...
this gives you a different bit rate, I assume.
Yes, it does. Mm. Now, on the way home from the office this evening, I thought, I'll try this video thing. So I connected it up and try and serve...
You mustn't watch video while you're driving, Andrew.
No, I did. I did.
There's rules against that.
I had someone else driving, so don't worry
That's
about it.
That's right.
So I tried watching it on the way home because I knew that the mobile signal strength would be up and down all the way home. And you could see on the picture didn't stop, but yet the picture got very pixelated in bits. Yeah. And all of a sudden go ka-ching and come back really nice and sharp.
Provided the audio keeps going, I actually don't mind if the picture bleeds out, particularly if you're mobile or walking around the house. But it's when the whole thing
starts
stuttering.
Depends on what you're watching. Yeah.
So I can thoroughly... so far, in my 24 hours playing of Orb, which Adam has recommended to me, I think it's actually quite a terrific thing. And it does, if you've got a video card in your machine, you can actually capture that and stream it off your box to your mobile handset wherever you be. So, for example, if you want
a desktop preview.
Pretty much. Mm. Well, you can actually watch, say, Channel 9 or Channel 7. If there's a footy game on, you can bung it on through your card. So if you're driving through the countryside or something like that, and you wanted to get a score update, for example, you can connect into your streaming device at home and watch a bit of the footy streamed at, can I just say, reasonably good quality, if not very good quality, from your video card on your device. So that was very impressive. Now, I'm just going to do another quick test for you here. I'm going to go for a video one. Just so you can hear, I've just pushed the button just then to say, show me Doctor Who. Now, it's loading a movie up, so it's actually doing video conversion at the same time. It's live radio, isn't it good? And hopefully in just a few moments,
it'll start.
We will get something that resembles something that says the video's taking a little longer because it's obviously working out, hopefully, the method of... Here we go. It's working out the level of where it's coming from and how much compression it needs to be. There you go. Here you go. Have a listen to this. Planet Earth. So this is the soundtrack of a video. And I'm seeing... I'll show it to the audience. If you're watching on the webcam, you can probably maybe see it there in the side of the iPhone.
No, not really. Closer.
And there you go. Stopped. That's the joys of 3G. It's buffering. But there's a classic example of it. It can be done. So,
but if you were at home and you decided, oh, I want to have my iPad or my iPhone and just wander around and watch the TV or...
Use your wireless network. It won't cost you a cent.
Use it locally. Yeah,
you could be out mowing the lawn. You could have one of those iPhone things on the front of the lawn.
You could.
Whilst you're watching the footy or doing that with the... Oh, look, it's endless possibilities, don't you think? So anyway, there you go. I'm very sold on Orb. If you've ever contemplated spending $12 on an audio streaming system, I don't think you can do much worse than that.
So you just need to pay
really
for the client on your phone.
Yeah, the server's free. You just download that off the orb.com website. If you
and
go there.
And it's available for multiple flavours, I think Adam said.
Yeah, I believe so. I've only tried it on my iGadgets and it works really well as the free plug-in. Once again, if you've got a folder with more than three videos in it, welcome to the world of Shuffle. What you end up seeing and hearing is really up to it. But if you pay the $12 and download the actual software for your device, it should work really quite well for you. Mm. So
excellent.
All right, Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Dr. Ronless' version this evening. He was unable to...
I wonder where he's got to.
I don't know.
Some conspiracy theory somewhere.
I think he had to do the shopping or something like that tonight under threat of... hopefully he'll be back in next week and, with all the good stories that that Dr. Ron so brings to the show. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. JD's in this evening, Justin's in, and, of course, Graham Callaghan, as per normal, is here, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an AAAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They've also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Well, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
In that promo that just went, you heard Dr. Ron talking about the Commonwealth Bank. I thought, what better way to talk about internet banking services with a segue like that? Thanks, Dr. Ron.
Excellent.
It's interesting. We're probably all very familiar with internet banking these days because it's the portal of choice for interacting with our banking.
I haven't walked into a bank store agent, whatever it's called these days, for a couple of years.
They call them branches.
For quite a few years now.
Collective now of bankers, just branches. With lots of leaves on them. Mm. It's a bit like that. I actually found my way in there the other day because there were certain things I couldn't actually do online, which I needed to when you're opening up a new account. They needed a DNA swab and there's no device on my computer for them to actually blow into the bag yet. So, anyway, I had to go down there and do that. It was a fairly good experience. But internet banking, not all internet banks are the same, apparently. And in a recent... news thing, I guess, that came out on IT News recently. CompuWare has released a one-month audit on the performance of Australia's major banking websites, which clearly reveals the order of magnitude by which hosting an application outside of Australia degrades the user experience for local customers. So they must be hosting their banking stuff offshore. I thought, well, that's interesting. I thought that's got to be a security issue, if nothing else. So... But anyway, of all the banking things at the moment, Westpac's got the gong. It was the top one. I'm not a Westpac customer. I don't know about Westpac. But the other ones that sort of didn't do too well, let's go to extremes, was the ANZ. Sorry, ANZ. Didn't do very well at all out of all of them.
Ba-bum.
So, that was quite an interesting thing. I use Commonwealth, and I find that to be quite good. My wife hates it because the credit card thing doesn't work too well on it. Compared to other banks, what are your experiences with banking? Anyone?
I use the Westpac one, and I haven't had any complaints about it. I've used the Commonwealth one, and it seems to be fairly functional as well. My own personal banking is mostly with a credit union, and their
online banking solution is a little bit rudimentary compared with some of the others.
Well, I've got to say, my co-op account is fantastic.
Are you with the same co-op I am?
A blue and white one?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we've used the same system and come up with different...
I quite liked it.
Well, actually, one thing that really just bugs me about it, and it's a very minor cosmetic thing. When you log into it, it just resizes your browser for you.
It does a pop-up, and it was one of the first to do a pop-up.
Yeah,
a full-screen pop-up, what's more.
But it forces that pop-up to be full-screen. It dynamically resizes it, and then if you close it, your browser's default to that size. So, yes, it annoys me that I can't... I have a very, very big screen on my computer, a very, very high resolution, and it's insane to fill it with this one little application with its,
it depends how many transactions in the middle. You've got there,
Graf. No, but it still only occupies the very centre of the screen and fills it with these big white areas on the sides. It's just insane. Why can't I pick the size that I want it to display? I just hate that they take that away from me for no reason.
I actually don't mind that. I'm also with St. George, and it does the reverse. It just gives you this tiny little login window and stays small.
Okay.
And makes you have to make the screen bigger.
Can I ask a question? I'm just curious to know. Do any of your banks have a mobile version?
Yes.
Because I know the Commonwealth does.
Not that it's much good to me, but St. George does.
Really? There's a little app for the Commonwealth Bank, which is available for your iGadget.
I've tried to use the main website of the credit union's banking system on my phone. Symbian phone. Yeah.
Oh, good luck.
That doesn't work. With a lot of frustration and a lot of scrolling around, I was able to see the figure I desperately needed, but on the whole, no, it wasn't a good experience.
The app that I've got for the iPhone for the Commonwealth Bank basically has a GPS location device in there, so you can go...
You actually downloaded... app for the Communist Bank.
I did. And it's got a little location device on it which says, find my local ATM as fast as you can, please. And you push the button and it says, yeah, it's just down here, turn right, and there you are. So you can see it on the map. Puts Google pins, those little red pins that sticks on Google Maps.
So there's a Communist Bank here in Victoria somewhere.
There is. Oh. Yeah, there's several, actually.
Good to know.
Big yellow things with black stripes on there. Yeah, you know them.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite good. But yeah, I guess this is the foray that a lot of consumers are going to be looking at very shortly to do all their banking. And, one day we might even be able to withdraw smart cash or something from it. Who knows? Have you used those new proximity card things yet? The smart chips that you get in your credit cards?
Yes.
Have you any of you guys used one of those?
So instead of having to swipe your card and sign...
Slide it in, you mean?
Yeah, you wave it across.
No.
You don't even touch.
Contactless. They just wave it past the reader.
No.
Haven't used one of those yet?
Not in a bank, no.
Not in a bank? No, in a retail.
Instead of swiping the card or putting it in to read the chip, you just swipe it past the
reader. To get into my office, buy something.
Same technology is the one to get into your office, but they're using it for small transactions that you don't have to sign or pin for.
When you're buying the paper in the newsagent or something like that.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, now not all banks seem to have the cards for it, though.
You've got to have the chip in the card, I think, is the telltale sign.
What they call the chip in the card is the little silver contacts that you plug into the thing, and a lot of them have got that now. But you've got to have the special proximity, I can't remember what the brand name that Visa use and a brand name that MasterCard use.
Okay.
And only a very small number of banks, and they're not the ones I use, unfortunately.
So when you use a PIN number when you put your card in the slot, or you sign and leave some evidence that you actually might have actually been there, when you just use your proximity card, how does it verify that you're you?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Just by the proximity card itself.
That's why it only has a small
You only
level.
Use it for small transactions.
Right. Mm-hmm. So obviously the bank's prepared to weigh that if you ring up and say, hang on a minute, that's not me. Okay then.
Unless it's
Telstra and they go, we'll meet you halfway.
I noticed a...
this time.
Yeah, $10 transaction, we'll give you $5 back.
I noticed a sign in the window of a McDonald's drive-thru saying that their new policy was that if the transaction was less than $35 on your Visa card or on your credit card, you didn't have to sign or pin.
Really?
Yeah. So, and again, it's that small transaction thing.
That's when it works.
Yeah.
But that's like going to the airport, isn't it, when you stick your credit card in the pay thing at the airport.
To pay for your parking. That's not just at the airport. That's parking places all over the place.
Yeah. Well, it's just such a small amount. Well, unless you park, it's not that small.
Yeah, it depends on where you park.
Let me rephrase that.
You did say airport, didn't you?
I did say airport, yeah. But no, yeah, well, that's true, actually. You can go for,
I've been parking
70 or 100 bucks if you're there for a couple of hours.
I've been parking an awful lot at a place in Richmond lately, and yes, gee, the parking bill has suddenly went up. So, yes, but I always pay for that. Yeah, it's a little one where you, on your way back to your car, you put the little cardboard card in the pay station, and then...
Then you stick your credit card in afterwards and you hope for
everybody
the best.
Else except for me spends the next 5 minutes feeding in coins or trying to feed in notes, and I seem to be the only one in the queue who puts the credit card in and it's paid for straight away.
I think it's great.
And I can't understand why everybody else spends the 15 minutes rummaging through their change purse and holding everybody else up. Just we're talking stick about your Visa card in and get out of my way.
The airport in particular, you put your credit card in when you enter, you don't have to do anything again.
Oh, well, that's even better.
Mm.
When you enter?
Yeah, you put your credit card in when you enter the airport short-term car park, at least.
Yeah.
You get your ticket back, and then you put your ticket in at the end, and it does the transaction as you go out.
I'll have to try that.
Mm. I haven't tried excellent.
That. Normally, you don't
get a receipt, though.
Right.
Oh, that's all right. It's under $75. The tax man doesn't care.
You hope it's under $75.
Well, yeah, you do, don't you? Anyway, it's the end of the financial year coming up very shortly, too. Don't forget, like we said last week on the show, spend on IT now, guys. If you can. If laptops, you can. Mac Minis, maybe even iPhone. I don't know, that's next month for us.
Yeah, too late
what
for
a bugger.
Us.
Oh, well, could have all expended in some capital there. But yeah, no, that's the credit card thing. The near field stuff, I tried it the other day with our bank, the bank that I use, and believe it or not, I've yet to get it to work properly on our local supermarket here in the Big Smoke, but yet when I was on holidays recently down at Inverloch in way down in country Victoria, they had it down there at their local one, and it worked a treat.
Excellent.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, you're starting to see more and more of the readers about at places where you do these short transactions.
Most of the salespeople have no idea how it works, because you come up and go, oh, can I use this? And they go, I don't know how it works.
Oh, you so you show them.
And you just do it first, so it's too late. Yeah.
Yeah. Then then they go, you have to sign for that. You go, no, don't. What do you want me to sign? Oh, yeah. So, but no, I think it's got merit. It's the way it's going to go. We're going to start seeing all these sort of things as we, walk the streets. You'll be getting Venn Coke machines, parking meters. What other things could you find? All sorts of things that'll come out with near field. We'll debit your credit card just for walking past it.
Just driving over the spot.
Yeah, there's a thought, isn't it? All right, now speaking of accounts and things like that, Microsoft are going to start a stolen accounts database, which Dr. Ron alluded to in the news this evening. But to report and track stolen account data is what it's all about. The company said that internet fraud, internet fraud alert, would allow researchers to report stolen account details into a central database, which then gets shared with law enforcement groups and retailers online. Now, this has got to be good. Traditionally, you ring up and say, help, my wife's stolen my credit card, and they cancel it for you. And then you've got to wait, many moons to get another one. But, to have an online database, I guess if the banks aren't keeping up with the Joneses, I'm not sure why Microsoft need to do it if the banks do it. But anyway, that's what they're going to do. The aim of the program, according to Microsoft, is to slow the trade of stolen account details. Maybe it's for people that don't realize that they've had their account stolen. I don't know.
So you can go and check.
Yeah. Anyway, well done Microsoft for taking the initiative, I reckon, but since they're going into banking, maybe they're giving up on the tech side of stuff. Who knows? Facebook. A lot of people get stuck into me about Facebook, and today is no different, but apparently this week there's been an open letter to Mr. Zuckerberg, who's the founder and probably still CEO of Facebook, asking him a lot of questions. Now, this open letter is freely available online. You can go and download it. Just Google it. Electronic Frontiers Foundation, they've got a link to it on their website. Things like fix the app gap by empowering users to decide exactly which applications can access their personal information. I guess what they're meaning there is like when you use Google to log into accounts like Zoho and things like that, where you're using an ID for an existing account. I know Yahoo do that with some of their systems. Also, for example, when you like eBay, I think, do transactions where how you get handed a PayPal and they basically do everything for you except enter your account number,
yes,
or enter your email address, that sort of thing. So obviously applications access their site, and making sure that users can say which apps do and don't have that authentication privileges. They want to make instant personalization opt-in by default. Well, welcome to America, where everything you're in,
Welcome to everything. Which one don't you want?
Yes, exactly. They also do not retain data about specific visitors to third-party sites that incorporate social plugins or the like button unless the visitor chooses to interact with these tools. So there must be some cookies and stuff like that on sites and stuff.
I played with my Facebook account just recently and added a couple of people in, and I thought, you know, that's all pretty good, and I got about 100 requests back.
Why is that? How does that work?
I don't know. Well, actually, I do know, because once you start getting...
This is the problem, isn't it?
Once you start getting into the little trail, it says, oh, do you also know these other 100 people?
Mm.
Because they might have once inquired about the individual you're trying to be a friend with.
Mm. Mm. They also want to provide users with control over every piece of information they can share via Facebook, which I thought would be lay down mazer, but obviously it's not.
No, it's not. You can't turn some things off.
Including certain things such as name, gender, profile picture, and networks.
Mm.
You can't turn them off. You can't say, I want to be anonymous.
So if you're following a particular group, you know, the Afghanistan Chess Association, for example, everybody gets to see it. You can't tell Facebook not to show people that, for example.
Yes. Mm. Anyway, they also want to protect Facebook users from other threats by using HTTPS connections for all other interactions by default. So they're looking for a secure access, obviously, to Facebook. And also, finally, to provide users with simple tools for exporting their uploaded content and the details of their social network so that users who are no longer comfortable with Facebook policies or want to leave for another social networking service do not have to choose between safeguarding their privacy and staying connected to their friends.
Mm.
So, now I've heard rumours that when you leave Facebook, the material, the account is sort of still there. It's just frozen. Is that the case?
Don't know. Never tried.
Never tried? Well, wasn't there a big day the other day where everyone was supposed to leave Facebook on droves?
30,000
Graham, you were talking about that, I think, weren't you?
Yeah. I'm ashamed to say that I didn't actually do it.
Oh,
having
really?
Having talked about it.
Oh.
Although I don't think I've logged into it.
I didn't know you had a Facebook
you haven't.
Account.
No.
All right. Anyway, so Mr. Zuckerberg did actually answer a lot of those questions in an open letter back as well. So you can go and dig those up. I'm not going to go through them all now because he was quite detailed in some areas too. But yes, I think they're starting to listen to what their users are saying. And then you just got to remember, guys, with these social networking sites, whatever you put up there is really it. It's your personal electronic identity, your second life, so to speak.
Well, as Graham says, don't put anything in an email that you don't want to have stored somewhere.
Mm. Yep. Everything you type, everything you send, yep, all gets stored somewhere.
Yeah, but...
Someone can get it back.
Yeah, but then again, it's good having paper trails. But obviously, as you say, Graham, you're just a little bit selective in what you put through.
Yeah.
Mm.
If you're really going to say something that, you know, wouldn't stand up in court about your boss, then, you know, don't say it in an email.
Yeah, I was reading...
Don't put it on Facebook.
There was a Facebook... Some woman in the United States was talking about Facebook, and for a $5 tip, she got up there and sort of said something about a customer, and she was then identified, and as a result, she's now jobless.
No longer working, yes.
So you just got to be careful about that, and especially if you go talking about your boss in other sort of ceremonious ways, you can be found out. Telstra tried the LTE stuff, the long-term evolution mobile communications.
This is the next thing to come after 3G, is
it? Not 4G. But the next thing
three and
is...
And a, half.
In
three
oh,
and
this a, is... Okay, 3G plus a bit.
100 megabit wireless over 75-kilometre cell is the headline of this particular story. So Telstra's LTE trial, which pitches three of the world's largest networking companies against each other in a proof of concept for a next-generation data network, has racked up some impressive results, pushing a 100 megabit per second wireless downlink to the edge of a 75-kilometre cell. Now, that's pretty good.
Mm, impressive.
75 kilometres from a cell and still getting 100 meg to a... controlled piece of that's got to be if for those who need really good bandwidth. I wonder what the return signal was like because you got to transmit back to the cell, but
off your mobile device presumably.
Yes, yes. So, but receiving that anyway. Nokia were vying for Telstra's business against the next G incumbent Ericsson because Ericsson have been providing all their hardware for a long period of time, and the Chinese manufacturer Huawei, if that's how you say it,
Huawei.
They were also in it with a bit of a go as well. But engineers from New South Wales and Telstra, from NSN, which is the Nokia Siemens network, and Telstra, have achieved a peak download through 100 megabits, averaging 88.1. Well, that's still pretty good over the new technology stuff. Because, like, if you look at what Telstra are offering now, in a perfect world, you're getting 42 megabits, which probably translates to 7.
Yeah, I've not seen
in the real
anything
world.
Like 42.
And you've got to have the device and the hardware to actually to do that. But at least
they're even
if
you do, you don't get anything like the speeds they say.
Well, no, that's true. That's true.
Definitely not. But, I mean, what they're doing here is that Telstra are actually taking standards that were developed in other parts of the world. I mean, developed mainly for use in Europe, where everybody lives in each other's pockets, and you can stand on top of a tall hill and see three different countries.
Yeah.
They're using technology that's been developed for that environment to use in Australia, where we, you know, you can stand on top of the tallest hill and not see anybody. You know, by just modifying the standard a bit, by changing the timings to allow it to operate over a longer distance. So, yes, strictly they're not the, you know, they're bending the rules, so to speak, to get it to work.
Yeah, well, they're doing well.
It's fascinating stuff, what they're achieving.
Especially in this country.
Where and they've done it with all their other networks. In the CDMA network, they tweaked and adjusted the standard so that it would work over a longer distance. They've done the same with NextG, and it works really well over a longer distance too. So, yeah, they've got a history of doing this.
Providing you've got the radio signal, it works well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. All right, Twitter's fail whale. You've seen that?
When you go to
Twitter and you try and log on and it says, we're a bit busy at the moment. There's a big whale that they put up on screen, held up by canaries and a few other bits and pieces.
I haven't seen that.
Well, it's been quite frequent of late, thanks to the rugby. The soccer.
Yes.
Sorry, everybody. I knew what I was talking
about. Which competition?
The soccer. So it's been given plenty worldwide of everyone sitting in the couches. Adam Turner's one. I see his tweets at 3 in the morning where he's commenting on the current...
So there's some sort of big soccer competition on somewhere, is there?
Apparently.
Okay.
So the world's game, the real football, has been in South Africa at the moment. But
no, I object to that.
Do you? Okay, well...
Real football.
Objection noted then. But, the poor old Twitter's been copying plenty, so they've put on a bit of extra capacity, and I don't think it's helped too much. So I think Twitter are just going from strength to strength in respect to users, but obviously when the big... It's a goal tweet has to go out.
Yes. They've had capacity issues before, yes.
But what will be interesting to know is if they do increase their capacity to deal with this issue, whether they wind it back again or whether it just stays there until there's the next big thing, whatever that is.
Mm.
I can't imagine too many things being bigger than the World Cup. But
no. What about the Australian election? No, maybe not.
No, maybe not.
No. What about the next Apple launch? No, because it all gets leaked.
Well, there was a Wi-Fi issue during the iPhone OS 4 demo.
A Wi-Fi issue?
Yeah, the actual demo had to stop because Steve's phone lost its Wi-Fi connection. Now,
how unfortunate is that? Because that's what happens in real life.
Cover story was, it was because everyone was using the Wi-Fi in the room and, you know, all the journalists were using it and Steve couldn't get it. But
Steve should have been on his own private channel.
The unofficial story is that the beated version drivers that he was using fell over.
Poor Steve.
Poor Steve.
See, it happens to the best of us.
Sure there wasn't someone in the front row with a jamming device? That would have been funny.
No, it would have been just an Apple iGadget device. Because I must admit, my iPad's Wi-Fi is not good.
It was Steve Ballmer in the front row.
Chanting. You would have heard him if it was him. But no, I must admit, my iGadget, my iPhone, works so much better in the wireless environment than does the iPad.
Right.
My iPad will drop out and not have wireless if I'm on the fringe of the property. The iPad will not have wireless, yet the iPhone will be having blistering signals.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously the case is slightly different in the iPad. There's the metal back, whereas the iPhone doesn't at the moment. So I sort of wonder whether that's going to interfere.
Think about the wisdom of designing a wireless device in a metal case
without an external aerial
antenna. Yeah, what were they thinking?
Heard of a Faraday shield? Yeah, anyway. Yeah. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I spot Gadget website of the week coming up after this. One thing we haven't spoken about tonight, and we're not going to now, is Sony's new 3D controller for its PlayStation. That'll have to be next week.
Oh, dear.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
It's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to do.
Unscripted. Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Horizon Mini Pack Portable Handheld Pocket Sized Fuel Cell Power Source, would you believe?
You don't sound like Dr. Ron. What's going on here?
Dr. Ron's missing, so I've
hang on,
I've found
can you
this...
say that again? A fuel, a what?
This is it's a fuel cell power source. You know, a hydrogen fuel cell.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pocket-sized, you know, handheld device.
A pocket-sized hydrogen fuel cell. Are you allowed to have these on trains or what?
Yeah, absolutely.
Carry your motor scooter or something.
Okay. Well, no, it's designed for recharging your portable devices. So you can carry it around with you. It comes with these little hydrogen cartridges. They're not pressurized. They've got this special way of storing the hydrogen in a spongy material stuff.
What was that, JD?
Does it power your flux capacitor?
It'll certainly power your flux capacitor if you're lucky
Michael
enough
J.
to have
Fox
one.
Eat your heart out.
It'll deliver the equivalent power of about 1,000 AA batteries. And basically it comes with connectors to connect to your smartphone or your iPod or your, you know, handheld game, your Nintendo DS or whatever it might happen to be, so you can charge up all your portable devices.
Powered on hydrogen.
Doesn't supply a whole lot of power. Supplies about 1.5 to 2 watts. But it can do it, it can supply, but the total capacity, it can do it for a long time. Which
is this available?
A total of like 12 watt hours.
Can you do
power.
This now?
You can do this now. This is on sale now. You can buy this thing. It's just the size fits in your hand and comes with two of these little hydrogen cartridges, which will keep it running for
Describe a hydrogen cartridge. Like a pen light battery or something?
It's like a little pen light battery thing. You have a thing that sits on your desk at home that fills it with hydrogen. And then, and that only costs a fraction of a cent because basically it gets the hydrogen from tap water and just uses a tiny amount of electricity to split the hydrogen away from the oxygen.
A nuclear process going on in the kitchen here.
Electrolysis, well documented process. You carry these little.
How much do these gadgets cost?
$99.
Oh, great, I'm going to get one.
You get a kit with the desktop charger, the handheld device, and two little cartridges. And, portable power to keep your devices recharged for as long as you like. The Horizon Mini Pack Portable Handheld Fuel Cell.
What a great, $99.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Have you guys ever wanted to register a .com.au domain name and you go, well, look at the price of that. You know, that's a bit pricey.
Yes.
Well, chances are you've been looking at Melbourne IT, if that was
well,
the case.
And no, because I know not to look at Melbourne IT.
Yeah, yeah. But look, domain names vary in prices. The best you sort of tend to come up with is probably, you know, $35-$40 Australian for .com.au. Now, there's a Melbourne IT have gone off and realised, I think, that, and this is really my personal opinion here, that it's a bit pricey for those sort of things. So they've actually developed a new domain name, which I'm going to give to you tonight. And you can register a .com.au domain name for $20 for everything for 2 years, which is $10 a year, which is really, when you think about what it is, it's just an entry into a database. That's not bad. So if you want to buy a .com.au...
You've got to pay your share of maintaining that database.
Well, yes. But $20 is better than $40, which is your average going price. So
I'll give you that.
And if you want to do that for .com.au, you've got to be a business. You've got to be registered ABN, anything business-related. You can't just be an individual. Head off to a place called registerfree.com. Good little website for... they do all sorts of other things, but if you're looking for .com.au's, probably one of the cheapest around. So,
so what's the domain name again?
It's called all the W's, registerfree.com. It's a division, I think, of Melbourne IT, but they're offering really good domain prices for .com.au's for the time being. $20. Good for business. Go off and get yourself one. So Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Billboards are always in the media for being controversial. Either sexy photos or being blown up as the one along CityLink is at the moment.
What, being blown up?
Yeah.
Oh, the one that lightning struck.
If lightning struck this a second time, that's the one. Yeah.
Oh, really? Some of those billboards can be very dangerous to your health if you...
Well,
haven't seen one for the first time, so it can be very distracting.
Don't live in North Carolina. It's not just the picture of beef and the new billboard in North Carolina that tried to catch drivers' attention. It's the aroma coming from the sign.
Oh, good smell-o-vision now on a billboard.
The billboard emits the smell of black pepper and charcoal to promote the new line of beef available at the local grocery chain.
Are you kidding me? That's amazing.
Smell-o-vision comes to billboards.
Oh, look, now I've heard absolutely
fantastic
everything.
Fantastic abuse of technology. I love
Isn't
it.
Isn't it? So
I want to know, driving past, how you're actually going to get a whiff of this. It must be pretty pungent.
It must come through the air vent of your, as you drive past,
Well, yeah, I find that pretty amazing when you think about all those sorts of things, because at the end of the day, you know, it's yes, imagine that going through the next Chucky's burger. Oh, no, maybe not. No. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. On that note, we're going to go. Same time next week. It's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.